This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
KPFT as a friend, join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley to Facebook users, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. On MySpace, KPFT provides event videos, updates, and a lot more. Visit myspace.com/KPFT Houston to add KPFT as a friend. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFT Houston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio and KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, the 21st Annual AIDS Walk Houston is coming up this Sunday, March 14th. It's a fun, non-competitive walk event for increased community awareness and AIDS education. Every year, the proceeds from AIDS Walk Houston go to many local HIV/AIDS service organizations, including AIDS Foundation Houston, whose Chief Executive Officer Kelly McCann will be here to tell us more. At 9:30, it's News Wrap from This Way Out. In the news tonight, same-gender couples get marriage licenses in Mexico City and Washington, D.C., and a second couple in Argentina weds in Buenos Aires. After News Wrap, the leaves and the grass are finally turning green, and that means it's time to bring in the green with Sally Huffer as the Montrose Counseling Center celebrates St. Patrick's Day. In our second hour, the Harlem Renaissance, an African-American literary movement of the 1920s and 30s, included several important gay and lesbian writers. Our guest for that topic will be Jack Rutland, director of the Stonewall Library and Archives, followed by Joel Abel Babb, artistic director of Unhinged Productions, Dennis Draper, director of the stage play The Most Fabulous Story Ever Told, and Andrea Hyde, who plays Mabel in The Most Fabulous Story Ever Told. Followed at 10:40 by our regular features from This Way Out, tonight looking at GLBT themes in the popular musical Wicked, and a look at the mixed and confusing state of GLBT human rights in Africa.
But first, well, first of all, I want to say thank you for being back, Glenn.
Thank you.
And Summer.
It's good to still be alive.
Yes, well, tomorrow there's going to be a special event for the GLBT community with the census. Elizabeth Lopez is here. In fact, she came in from Dallas, and she's going to be putting that event on with the community. Now, what is the connection? I mean, we're all supposed to fill out the census form. What is the special connection with the GLBT community and the census?
Well, this year, for the first time, we are going to count married couples, same-sex married couples. In the past, we have counted unmarried same-sex couples, and if in 2000 they had put husband or wife, they were all lumped into the unmarried partner category. This year, however, we are going to, if you put husband or wife as person number two on your form, because person number one will fill out and put their sex, and then person number two will put their sex, we will count you as married.
Even though in the state of Texas, the Constitution says gay marriages don't exist.
That is correct. It doesn't matter if you were legally married. And I use the example of my brother and my brother-in-law who've been together 20 years. They are married in every sense of the way. They're going to put married. My sister and her partner, together 5 years, very committed, not so much married. They'll probably put unmarried partner. So it's totally self-identifiable what we're doing on the census this year for you to put married husband or wife or unmarried partner.
And this all has to do with the change probably of the administration.
Absolutely. Last year, the Obama administration overturned prior policy, and they decided that when a same-sex couple put married or husband or wife, they will be counted as such.
Now, in the last census, there was, what were the numbers like? Do you have any idea?
About 600,000. In 1990, when they first put unmarried partners to see what the heterosexuals were doing, and the way I was told, you know, to see how they were living in sin, they got some numbers that they didn't really expect when same-sex partners put unmarried partner. And it was a little over 190,000, something like that. And then in 2000, it was 600,000. And just people didn't realize that they could put that on there, but they can. It's absolutely self-identifiable, and so that's what...
Right, and the data itself is kept very secretive. It's just the statistical information
is what we use. If you put your name and phone number, it's totally confidential. We take oaths for the rest of our lives never to release that information. We could go to jail. We could be fined. It trumps the Patriot Act. It trumps Freedom of Information Act. Nobody can get that personal identifiable information from a census form.
Now, unfortunately, people who live by themselves who are GLBT or maybe roommates, those numbers aren't tracked anyway yet.
No, not yet. But everybody is counted. We count everyone living in the U.S., and that's the most important thing. We want everybody to fill it out and mail it back.
And we should be expecting those forms in the mail soon?
Soon. You're probably getting some postcards about now in your mailbox telling you it's coming. They want you to know to keep an eye out for it. So around mid-March, the actual form will be mailed out. 10 questions, one of the shortest questionnaires in census history, should take you about 10 minutes for each person in your household, and then it affects the next 10 years of your life.
Right, and if you don't fill it out, then you have people coming to people's doors to check to see why, to follow up. Maybe you didn't get it in the mail.
Correct.
Because my understanding is the Census Bureau really wants to count everybody. And you fill it out, that 10th question actually asks for everybody who lives at that residence.
That's right. Everybody that lives in the residence. And some people are afraid to say if they live in an apartment and maybe they have 10 people and they're only allowed 5. Again, that information is so confidential. We don't give that information to anybody. We just want to count the people and make sure they're represented where they live. We want to count where everybody is living.
And the importance of this is that it brings thousands of dollars back into the city or the county, because every person that's counted, that's how they do this. The other thing that probably people don't know is that the data is also used by corporations such as Starbucks, mm-hmm. or Donamo's or McDonald's or Home Depot to figure out where's the best place to put the stores. And the more people live in a certain area, the more likely they will. That's why you always see a Home Depot and a Lowe's next to each other, because those are the demographics. That's why there's three Starbucks in River Oaks right next to each other.
That's right. Census data is used for so many things. It's $400 billion of federal funding every year that's based off of census data. And you're right. People use it to build roads, you know, to traffic plans, things like that. Meals on Wheels came out of one of the census because they realized seniors were going hungry. A lot of the children's programs and schools came out of census numbers. So it's real important that everybody get their census form, fill it out, mail it back.
Now, you're having a special form tomorrow.
Yes, we are, tomorrow night.
And what's the purpose of that?
Well, the purpose of that is to let the GLBT community know what we're doing different on the census. That, one, we're a federal agency with actual GLBT outreach. How awesome is that?
Yes.
We were at Creating Change two or three weeks ago. We had a booth. We were talking to people, letting people know about the census. So we just want to let the community know. Every time I talk to the community, they're unaware of the marriage part. About it doesn't matter if it was legal or not. If you believe yourself married, mark yourself husband or wife. And so we want to let them know that this is what we're doing this year, how important the census is. We're also going to have MALDEF there, the Mexican-American Defense Legal Fund. They're going to talk about the confidentiality because so many people are afraid about it. And there's nothing to be afraid of. That information is confidential. We never release it. In 72 years, we'll release it. But by then, you know, that's our lifespan, they think, you know.
One additional item. Now, in 2000, I was an enumerator and eventually moved up to a director in the census. So I was part of it, so I know about the confidentiality. The question is that for people out there in these hard times for employment-wise, when will they be able to fill out applications to become employed with the census as enumerators?
They actually should be calling right now and testing. Most of the local census offices are running tests all the time. You can call 866-861-2010 or go to 2010 Census Jobs or census.gov/2010census/jobs, but it's easier to call the number. And what they'll do is they'll take your zip code, find out where you live, because they want people that work in their neighborhoods, live in their neighborhoods, to work in their neighborhoods. So you call, you have to get a test. There's a practice test online. And then late March, sometime around then, that's when they'll start doing the hiring. But they're recruiting right now, and you have to test first before you can.
And don't be frightened of the test. You can get it online to look at it. It is not college level, so you don't be frightened of it.
No,
get you a job. It's
right.
It pays well.
It pays well.
It's fun work to do. You meet a lot of new people.
So let's talk about this. This event is tomorrow?
Yes, it's tomorrow at 7 o'clock. It's at the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church at 2025 West 11th Street. And it starts at 7, as I said. And again, we're just going to, one, talk about the importance of the census, talk about the census and the LGBT community, and then talk about the confidentiality, and then answer any questions that someone might have.
Great. Elizabeth Lopez is with us from the U.S. Census Bureau, and it's the outreach to the LGBT communities, and we'll hope to see you tomorrow. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Bayou City Chorale, recorded last year and presented on an album called Topsy Turvy. That's actually a private label, so it's probably only available from them. The title of the song, The Great Peace March. This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's that time again of the year, and finally it's getting warmer out. Finally, and it must be the time for the annual AIDS Walk, which is happening when?
Sunday. This Sunday, that's March the 14th, our registration booth opens at 8 a.m. with the opening ceremonies beginning at 9, and the walk kicks off at 10 a.m. in Sam Houston Park downtown.
We're speaking to Kelly McCann, who is Chief Executive Officer of the Houston AIDS Foundation. And it's very nice of you to come here every year to talk about this. And what kind of crowds are you expecting?
Well, typically, even last year when we had the rains and the not-such pleasant weather, we had about 10,000 people.
That's
out
incredible.
At the... Yes, it's an incredible show of support, not only for AIDS Foundation Houston and the other organizations that raise money through this event, but it's a show of support for the people in our community who are living with this disease. It's a visible show of concern and compassion, and that's why we invite all Houstonians to please come out and join us. If the weather's good, maybe we'll have 15 or 20,000 folks at the park this Sunday.
Well, and you work with a whole bunch of different organizations and corporations, and you encourage, and at least last year, I'm sure your website's the same way this year, so you can sign up, you can make pledges, you can form groups with your friends.
Absolutely. We encourage everyone to go to the website, and if I can give the plug, that's www.AIDSWalkHouston.org. It's very easy. You can easily register yourself as an individual, or if you have a group of friends and you want to walk together, form a team, and then using the software that we have, it's very easy to send email solicitations out to everyone you know, and they can donate online. Easy, breezy, beautiful. CoverGirl's not the only one who can say that. It is truly a very simple way to raise money and to ask people for money, because some individuals are uncomfortable about asking people for donations.
Yes.
The email system makes it painless for everyone.
Right. I certainly know I've gotten hit up a couple times, but
good.
That's great. It just says the system is working.
Thank you. Yes. And I'm hoping not only that you were hit up, Jack, but that you donated. But we'll talk about that later on.
So who are the other organizations that are working in conjunction? Or
well, and I want to let everyone know, this is something I'm very proud of. AIDS Foundation Houston, this is the 21st AIDS Walk Houston, and we have convened and put on this event all 21 of those years. But a few years ago, we decided that it was an opportunity for us to give back to the entire HIV community. And so about, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago, we invited other AIDS service organizations to raise money through our event. Mm-hmm. And not to just, you know, pat ourselves on the back here, but I want you to think about, is there any other fundraising event, Susan G. Komen or the MS-150, those are great events, but they don't allow other providers to raise money through their events. This is a way in which I think the HIV community is unique. We really do all try to come together to help our clients. And so we at AIDS Foundation Houston invite other AIDS service providers to raise money through our walk.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, this is your premier event that happens every year, and that you were opening up the doors to share.
You know, it really is. I think it is a very unique situation, and we're proud to be able to do it, and we will, as far as we have our current plans, we'll continue to do this. All that we have in exchange for their participation, we provide everything, and then we just ask for a certain percentage of their proceeds to cover costs.
Sure.
We're not looking to make any money off of these other organizations. And then, you know, the bottom line is, the bigger the walk, the better it is for our entire community. And there are about 25,000 people in our city right now living with HIV and AIDS. A huge percentage of them are impoverished. Mm-hmm. These are individuals that need help obtaining medications and health care, housing, food. We're talking about some of the most basic needs. That's what the organizations who participate in the walk, those are the services that we provide, and that's why this is such an important event.
And I understand, and I have a friend who volunteers at Thomas Street, who is a big admirer of you, of all the prison work that you did before you were at the AIDS Foundation. But the fact that some of these people that go there and get the medication, if they don't have food to eat at the same time, medication doesn't work.
You know, thank you for mentioning that, because it is so true, especially with certain HIV antiretroviral medications. They are only efficacious if they're eaten with food, and sometimes it's a particular type of food, like a high-fat food, because it's a fat-soluble medication. And unfortunately, because of the push for Ryan White funding to fund medical care, there has been less and less money available for food. And even recently at Stone Soup, which is our food pantry, we received notification from the federal funders that we had to even tighten the eligibility requirements, making it even harder to get assistance for food. Mm. So that's why something like the walk, where we raise unrestricted funds, funds that we can use to do whatever we need to do to best serve our clients, that's why events like the AIDS Walk are so important.
What is the state of AIDS in Houston, Texas, and Harris County right now?
We are better off than many other places in the country. Maybe not in terms of the number of new infections and the number of people living with the disease, but in terms of the resources that are available to people in need. Unlike rural areas of our state, and even unlike certain other cities, we have, I would say, a network of at least 50 different organizations that can provide some sort of assistance, whether it's on the medical side or the supportive services side, even child care, or like we run a camp for HIV-positive children. So we're very lucky in terms of the resources, but I have to say we got some very discouraging news yesterday. Not yesterday, I'm sorry, it must have been Friday, from the city of Houston, their prevention department, and the number of people contracting HIV has actually increased. We now are looking at someone in our city becoming infected every 7 hours. So that's about 3.5 people a day, if you will, become infected. And think about that, year after year after year, the number is growing, and unfortunately, the prevention messages are not reaching everyone they need to reach.
And what age group is that affecting?
I would say, looking at the most recent statistics, they don't really start collecting data until someone's 13. So about 5% of the new infections are in teenagers. The bulk of the new infections occur in young adults, people between 20 and 40. That's where the largest share is. But even 10% of the cases are in people in my age bracket, 49 and up. So it really is a disease that touches all of us, regardless of your age, your gender, orientation, or race. So it you know, we say that all the time, but it's true.
Are the medications getting any better, or are we sort of stalled at a plateau right now?
There are new medications, as a matter of fact, new medications in the pipeline all the time, and that's good. It's been a few years since we've had a real impressive one come out. A few years ago, there was one for individuals who had exhausted all their other options. But there are always new meds in the pipeline, new ways of fighting the virus at different stages of its life cycle. So nothing in the realm of a cure, but certainly new meds, when one quits working, then we've got another option for someone, and so on, so that they can at least maintain their current level of health and keep the viral load, the numbers of virus down.
And that was one of the concerns, that when these medications came out like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that they would, after so many years, stop working.
Yes, they were concerned that over time, if you missed even one dose, you know, that's the thing about HIV, is it's a smart virus. And if you miss a dose, then you're leaving a little window of opportunity for a couple of replications of that virus to get through untouched by that medication. And then over time, if that happens enough, then that virus can develop resistance and the medication will quit working altogether. So that's why whenever you're on HIV meds, it is really stressed how adherence is such an important thing. It's no different than the antibiotics we all take, but it's even at a more urgent level. You must be adherent. You must take your medication as prescribed every time, every way possible. You eat what you're supposed to eat. You take it when you're supposed to take it. And then you will be healthy and live a long, healthy life. It's just that humans, we're not perfect. And so we make mistakes and we forget doses and that kind of thing.
And what does the AIDS Foundation do?
Yes, we are not a medical provider. AIDS Foundation Houston, just to remind everyone, we were founded in 1982 and one of the first AIDS service organizations in the entire country. I think APLA in Los Angeles and the Gay Men's Health Crisis in New York, they predated us, but not by a whole lot. When we were initially founded, we were an all-volunteer agency that was created to provide in-home care to men who, frankly, at that time were dying of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And luckily, over the years, the needs of the community changed. People weren't dying as much. It's still a potentially deadly disease, but they needed help living. And that's, I would say, the best thing that I could say to describe AIDS Foundation Houston. We help people enhance the quality of their lives. We provide housing, which is absolutely essential. We have our food assistance program, Stone Soup. We have a variety of supportive services to help people link into the system. The Ryan White care system, the AIDS care system, is great, but it's somewhat complicated to navigate. And so we can help you navigate that through case management and benefit and resource counselors, as we call them. And then we also provide supportive services, like I mentioned, for children and youth. We have camps. We have a teen leadership forum for HIV-positive youth who were born with HIV, and no one ever planned on them living to adulthood. And here they are about to embark upon adulthood, and they're not prepared for life as an HIV-positive adult. And so those are the kinds of things that we do. We certainly link to medical care and have great partnerships with Legacy, Saint Hope, HACS, and all the other medical providers in town. But I have to tell you, we're often the first door that someone comes to, because even when you're facing an illness like HIV, food and shelter trump medical care in terms of your hierarchy of needs.
And there's still a stigma.
There is still a stigma. You know, we've seen great advancements in greater tolerance and understanding around HIV. Certainly the gay community, I wouldn't say there's as much stigma in the gay community as in other areas of our society. But there is still stigma out there, and I think people still have to learn not only how to talk with someone about HIV, how to negotiate safer sex, and just how to communicate in general about our health and our status. And that's something that through our education department we try to help people do. If you're positive, we try and help you learn how to disclose your status to someone and when is the proper time to do it. And then on the reverse side, we try to help people learn how to negotiate condom use.
Well, and does that message get put into the school system?
I have to be honest and say no, not very often. And that is not because we don't want to. But school districts and individual schools are often very nervous about the C word. We are often allowed to discuss abstinence and monogamy. But most of the time when I've gone in to do talks, and the same is true for many of my staff, unless a teacher has gotten parental permission slips before the presentation, or unless a child, one of the students, asks a question about condoms, then you can certainly respond. But we are not allowed to take condoms in. Mr. Woody doesn't travel with me to the school districts. That's my demo. I don't take Woody in and demonstrate the proper way to put on a condom in the schools. But if anyone was willing to let us, we certainly would. And may I say, we wouldn't do quite like the lady in Hitchcock. If you remember, the woman down in Hitchcock just recently did some rather graphic descriptions of sexual acts in an attempt to provide information. So we are professionals. We know the way in which to do it, and we'd be happy to. I think that it is appropriate for parents to be cautious about the information that their children receive, but I think it is important that the children receive all the facts, not just the A and the B, not just the abstinence and the B monogamous, but we've got to give them the whole story in order to have any kind of credibility.
So Sunday is the big AIDS walk.
Yes.
And how do you get all these people? How do you get the word out to all these people? I mean, that's pretty incredible, the numbers of people you have. And I know Houston was a little bit slow sort of to adapt the walks like some other cities, but it seems like you're going pretty strong now.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we are. Now, we have the largest AIDS walk in Texas, and have for many years now, not only in the numbers of people that we attract, but in the dollars raised. I think part of it is word of mouth. We've got 20 years before this year, you know, a little bit of 20-year history to help us. But then we use email, of course. We utilize
the social media.
Oh, of course. We got Facebook. We got all that. But then we also have great partnerships with the media. Channel 2, KPRC, they run a public service announcement for us. And folks like y'all, thank you very much, KPFT and Queer Voices, for allowing us to come on and talk about AIDS Walk. This is the kind of thing that gets the buzz going and gets people informed about the event. And then we also have some billboards that have gone up recently.
Oh,
we'll utilize whatever kind of method that we possibly can.
Absolutely.
And if I can mention, since Sunday is AIDS Walk, I also noticed that KPFT's 40th anniversary party is Sunday. And I just think the perfect Sunday, I've got it planned out for everyone. You can come to the AIDS Walk on Sunday morning. If you get there at 8 o'clock, you can get registered, have some coffee, thanks to our friends at the Montrose Starbucks. And by the time the walk finishes up, by 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, it'll be time to head over to the Mucky Duck for KPFT's anniversary party. So don't worry, Houston, you've got your Sunday plans all
right. Sounds like a Sunday for me.
And so where is the event? Where's the AIDS Walk?
AIDS Walk Houston is in the Sam Houston Park in downtown Houston. You know, that's the lovely park with the old houses and everything in it. It is, that's, I think, Lamar at Bagby. And if you come at 8 o'clock, that's when registration opens. If you've already registered, there's no need to register again at the park. If you've already registered, just make sure you get there in time for the opening ceremonies. Our fabulous mayor will be there, along with performances from the Gay Men's Chorus. We've got some dancers. Elliot Perez, who's a local fitness guru, he's going to be warming us up with his antics and his aerobics. And then we have entertainment following the walk. So Ezra Charles is going to be performing. So it's a fun way to spend a Sunday morning. Not only is it a good time, but it is a good cause.
Absolutely. So the best way to get some more information to sign up is
our website, which is www.AIDSWalkHouston.org. And if you are not internet friendly, then I encourage you to call us, and that is 713-623-6796.
Great. Kelly McCann, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the AIDS Foundation Houston, telling us about the AIDS Walk, which is happening this Sunday, March 14th, and you can get some more information at AIDS Walk Houston. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 6, 2010. Equality activists might call them happy coincidences this week. Same-gender couples got civil marriage licenses for the first time in the capital cities of both Mexico and the U.S., while a second gay couple married in Argentina in what was a first in its capital city of Buenos Aires. Dozens of Mexico City gay and lesbian couples registered for marriage licenses on March 4th, the day Latin America's first marriage equality law took effect. According to local media reports, the first same-gender wedding ceremonies will be held on March 12th. The director of the civil registry, Hegel Cortez, said that his agency has also received a formal request for permission to hold a mass same-gender wedding ceremony on March 14th for an expected 300 couples. With strong backing from Mayor Marcelo Ebrard, Mexico City's left-of-center legislature approved the law opening marriage to gay and lesbian couples in December. It also allows those couples to adopt children. They'll have the same status as heterosexual married couples, gaining rights they were denied under the city's old civil unions law. The marriage legislation is being challenged by the politically conservative federal government in Mexico's Supreme Court on constitutional grounds, but remains in effect while the appeal is heard. The country's powerful Roman Catholic Church has also strongly criticized the new law.
There was a bit of last-minute drama in Washington, D.C. before that city's first marriage licenses were issued to gay and lesbian couples on March 3rd. The Washington Post reported that by mid-afternoon, 124 couples had filed to be married, far surpassing the usual dozen applications on a single day. Some couples brought their children or spoke of the importance to their sons and daughters. The law opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples was overwhelmingly passed by the city council in December, with strong support from Mayor Adrian Fenty. There were no serious attempts to override the law in the U.S. Congress, which has 30-day oversight following the passage of all D.C. legislation. But after their demands for a public referendum on equality were rejected by district election officials and lower courts, all citing the city's Human Rights Act prohibiting such a vote, religious right opponents filed an appeal with U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. He denied their request to delay the issuance of licenses to same-gender couples until the public had voted on their legitimacy. Roberts wrote that it has been the practice of the court to defer to the decisions of the courts of the District of Columbia on matters of exclusively local concern. Following the mandatory waiting period, the first same-gender weddings in Washington, D.C. were expected to be held on March 9th.
In Argentina, Damian Bernoth and Jorge Salazar were married on March 3rd in a civil ceremony in the nation's capital, Buenos Aires. Court rulings had previously prevented another same-gender couple from marrying in Buenos Aires, but a judge issued a ruling last week allowing Bernoth and Salazar to marry there. Jose Maria de Bello and Alex Freira became the first same-gender couple to legally wed in Argentina in December in Ushuaia, the capital of the state of Tierra del Fuego. Sympathetic officials there approved the marriage after the couple's effort was rejected in Buenos Aires. The country's Supreme Court is currently considering an unrelated marriage equality case. A bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples has long been stalled in Argentina's Congress.
Updating news we've been following in Africa, opponents of the proposed law that would impose the death penalty on some gay people in Uganda delivered a petition with some 500,000 signatures to Parliament this week calling for the bill's rejection. Anglican canon Gideon Bayomugisha delivered the petition. He told the Associated Press that the bill teaches intolerance and hatred and is counter to the Ugandan Constitution's anti-discrimination laws. Speaker of Parliament Edward Sikandi Kiwanuk said the bill would be debated soon.
Police in Malawi have announced that they're hunting down key figures in the gay community after discovering pornographic films at the office of the country's only known LGBT rights group, the Center for the Development of People. Police spokesman Dave Tingwalu told Agence France-Presse that prominent personalities were being targeted and that suspects include legislators, priests, academics, and other professionals. He said that police had been called after thieves broke into the group's office, or hideout, as he called it. "We discovered pornographic films, files, and information about gay meetings," Tingwalu said, "and we immediately launched the probe to track down the gays." He said the suspects would be charged with having carnal knowledge of any person against the order of nature and indecent practices between males. Consensual private adult same-gender sex is punishable in Malawi by up to 14 years in prison. The Center for the Development of People has reportedly been financing the defense of Tawange Chimbalanga and Stephen Manjeza, a gay couple who were charged with indecent practices for holding a public engagement party in December. They've twice been refused bail, and the country's high court has refused to hear a constitutional challenge to the law. A verdict is expected on March 22nd.
Three global human rights organizations have sent a joint letter to the government of Turkey, urging it to act against an ongoing pattern of violence against transgender people. Human Rights Watch, the European region of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, known as ILGA Europe, and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, called on Turkish officials to launch educational programs, pass anti-discrimination laws, repeal laws used by police to harass sexual minorities, and create communication channels between police departments and the LGBT community. At least 8 transgender people have been brutally murdered in Istanbul and Ankara since November 2008. The most recent victim was stabbed 17 times in her apartment in Istanbul's Fatih neighborhood.
Members of Guyana's Society Against Sexual Orientation Discrimination have filed suit in the South American country's Supreme Court challenging the law against cross-dressing. It makes it an offense when an individual, being a man in any public way or public place for any improper purpose, appears in female attire, or being a woman in any public way or public place for any improper purpose, appears in male attire. The law is part of a section of Guyana's legal code that also punishes same-gender sex with up to life in prison. It's the only South American country that continues to criminalize private consensual adult gay sex. Guyanese police arrested several male-to-female transgender people during a series of crackdowns about a year ago. They were convicted under the cross-dressing ban and fined $7,500 Guyanese dollars, about $36 U.S. dollars. The judge also told them to go to church and give their lives to Christ. Sean Falatama Clark, one of the arrestees and a plaintiff in the case, said, "It was one of the most humiliating experiences of my life. I felt like I was less than human."
But in what's been described as a small but significant victory, France no longer considers transsexualism to be a mental disorder. Even though transgendered people have gained legal protections in some countries, France has become the first in the world to officially stop listing them as mentally ill. Health Minister Roselyne Bachelot this week ordered the change. Some activists call it a progressive move that signifies the social progress transgenders have made in France, but it doesn't advance their medical rights or legal status. Though the state does pay for gender reassignment surgeries and treatments, patients are first required to undergo extensive medical and psychiatric evaluations. Doctors, too, complain of being poorly trained and equipped for such surgeries and of being stigmatized for performing them. Many transgenders cross the border into Belgium, considered to have some of the best reassignment surgeons in the world, and pay for the surgery there out of their own pockets. French transgenders are also required to have the surgery, including sterilization, before they can legally change their gender on government documents.
And finally, in the Australian state of New South Wales, hundreds of thousands of revelers watched or participated in the annual Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras parade on February 27th. Various media reports estimated the crowd at about 300,000. Some 135 floats and 9,500 often flamboyantly dressed performers marched, danced, and sashayed through downtown Sydney on a balmy Saturday night. Police said that the 35 parade-related arrests and 3 anti-gay assaults were lower than those reported in 2009. The celebration was also not without controversy. An LGBT animal rights group that won a Most Creative Award for their Vegetarians Taste Better float in 2007 was denied a spot in this year's parade for reportedly not being queer enough. Tasmania's State Tourism Board was not allowed to distribute LGBT-friendly visitors' information because that would have violated the exclusivity granted to New South Wales. There were also complaints from some longtime activists that Mardi Gras, which began as a grassroots street demonstration in 1978, had become far too commercialized. And because someone in the Mardi Gras organizing committee apparently forgot to book a venue for the traditional big post-parade party, it was held a week later on March 6th.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 6, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, as the weather breaks, we have St. Patrick's Day coming up.
I eat the blarney, yes. Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Let's bring in the green.
Sally Huffer's with us from the Montrose Counseling Center, and this has sort of been a trademark fundraiser, and more or less a just very good get-together of community people.
Oh, yeah. We like to call it our annual St. Patrick's Day celebration.
And the only unfortunate thing about the St. Patrick's Day celebration the Montrose Counseling Center does is the fact that Jack Jackson is no longer with us.
I know. It's really hard. Jack was our leprechaun for many, many, many years. And so we have a picture of Jack that we take to the event every year. And this year we're going to have a little program because people have asked us, hey, who is Jack Jackson? Some people didn't know who he was. And so we're going to give some people some information. And we just sent out our newsletter today and we talked a little bit more about Jack. And we certainly, you know, would love people to stop by our website and learn more about Jack.
Jack was a longtime activist in this community, even before a lot of people were involved in the community, even us older people, some of us older people. He's, like, supported almost every group. He volunteered even when he was a sponsor at some of the events. Hardworking, just a wonderful, wonderful person. Always had a great attitude. And it's so nice of you to be honoring him.
Well, you know, year after year, I remember the first year I started working at Montrose Counseling Center, and that was almost 10 years ago. And I remember going to an event. It was, I think it was the
Miss America. What was that called? The
Miss Camp America.
I went to that, yeah. Right, with the Endowment Board President, Ralph Herring. And when we got there, I was introduced to Jack, and it was just this larger-than-life personality coming out of this little sprite of a man. And he said, well, sure, you know that I'm the leprechaun. Well, I had just started at the Counseling Center, and I hadn't even heard of the word bringing in the green, much less leprechaun. And so, but he was a perfect leprechaun. And every year he would try to outdo the previous year in terms of his outfit. And he would get just the most outrageous costume, show up at bringing in the green, and people would pin, originally they would actually pin to his clothing dollar bills, and then he would give them a shamrock sticker and a kiss, and then after a while people were poking too much, and so they would just, he carried a little bucket, and so he would collect some donations for us that way. But everybody seems to have a Jack Jackson story. You were telling me one before.
Yes, there was a Ray Hill fundraiser, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was over here on Hawthorne where the old community center was. And oh, it was Ray Hill's birthday, that's what it was, and we were celebrating that, and for some reason one of the volunteers didn't quite live up to their promise, and Jack was a sponsor, and he came in and he says, is there anything I can do? And I says, I really need a bartender. He's fine. And he did it. He just did it. In fact, I think he looked forward to doing those things.
I think so, too. One of the things on our website, and we just relaunched the website.
Yes,
today.
I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, and so there's a story about Jack, and we pull quite heavily from an article in Outsmart magazine from 2005, because in 2005, Jack turned 80 years old. And so this year, we like to think that he would have been 85, and he'll be there in spirit. So we want to kind of nod in his direction and you know, remember all of the wonderful things that he did for us. So we will have Jack there at the party, like we always do. Mm-hmm. And if I could tell you a little bit, it's going to be this Friday, which is March 12th. We always have it on the Friday right before St. Patrick's Day. And it's going to be at the lovely home of John Danielson. And we've had it there for many years in a row right now. It's a gorgeous home. The address is 3618 Burlington Street. And it is kind of nestled over by the HSPVA area, you know, in Montrose. I always tell people, go down Alabama like you're going downtown, turn left on Flora Street, turn right on Marshall Street, and go to the end of the block. And you can't miss it, because it's a three-story home. It's beautiful. And he's hosted it a number of years now. And then Dwayne Todd, who's an attorney here in Houston, has been doing the food for a number of years. So we're incredibly grateful to both of them for hosting the party this year. And it's going to be this Friday. It's right after work, 5:30 to 8:30. So you can head over and, you know, support Montrose Counseling Center. It is probably one of the, you know, most, one of the events that we have that most people look forward to, because it's just a lot of fun. It's a cocktail party.
And this, of course, is supporting the programs at the Montrose Counseling Center.
Well, and that's really important, too, because when we can raise money like this. I was listening to Kelly McCann from AIDS Foundation Houston before, and you know, she talked about how important unrestricted funds are to all of our agencies. And a lot of the government grants that we receive or the foundation monies that we receive, they're earmarked for specific programs. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes there'll be a gap in services that aren't being met by those, you know, grants. And so we need to find ways to fill that in. And so when we can hold a fundraiser like this and bring some money in that's not restricted, that way we can apply it to whatever program needs it the most. And one of the things, you know, that we're talking about is the SPRI program. Jack Jackson was actually one of the inspirations for the SPRI program, because as he was getting older, his health was failing, and he refused to have assistance in his home. He refused, so, you know, and he needed some help.
Isn't that also part of some of the culture? And probably, and maybe I'm misspeaking because I'm not a professional here, but some of us GLBT people love our independence, even probably more than the non-GLBT community, because that's part of what got us out of our home and said, we're independent. And there's that wonderful dialogue, or monologue in Torch Song Trilogy about where the head of the Harry Firestein basically says, you know, I've done all this. I learned how to sew. I learned how to cook, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so I can be independent.
Yeah, and I can be self-sufficient. And when you're no longer self-sufficient, you know, first of all, and one of the reasons why this is so important through Montrose Counseling Center, you know, isolation is a big issue that a lot of seniors face, and especially when we're in a community where looks and youth are highly celebrated. And so, you know, we don't want to forget the seniors in our community. And so when we saw what Jack Jackson was going through, we started to look around and say, hey, what's happening here? And a lot of people, when they found themselves either needing home health care, I mean, people would have to, you know, before they would invite somebody into their home, they would have to go through and kind of cleanse, and I'm doing those air quotes, cleanse their home of, I mean, if you have beautiful artwork that shows, you know, a beautiful nude male, are you going to invite somebody into your home and have them take care of you and, you know, have them question you and that sort of thing? And how affirming are the residential facilities that we, you know, that people go to, the nursing homes and that sort of thing? And so a lot of people end up going back into the closet, even if they've been out for, you know, 40, 50 years of their life.
Right. And it was real interesting, if you remember Tales of the City, where one of the things we were talking about that time was setting up living facilities for when gay men got older. And then, of course, AIDS happened. So all that sort of got washed away because we were dealing with an immediate problem.
Right. And so, I mean, looking at this generation, I mean, the baby boomers are, you know, just turned 65. And so we're looking at a population that's going to be growing and growing and growing. Now, when we started the SPRI program about 4 years ago now, we had a 3-year grant from the federal government to start it up, but that's gone now. And so in order for us to be able to sustain that program and sustain the funding and provide those services, we need to be able to raise money at events like Bringing in the Green. And one of the wonderful things about Bringing in the Green that I love is that when I go, I see all these older men that I haven't seen for so long, and they come year after year. And then I see, you know, people my age, and I see the younger people turning out, and, you know, men and women. And it's just such a wonderful mix and blend of people coming out to celebrate and getting to know one another. I mean, usually, and what's so funny to me is that the event runs from 5:30 to 8:30. It's over by 8:30. I mean, you can still go out and do whatever it is you want to do on a Friday night. You might even have tickets for, you know, a show or something. And
or for some of us older people, it's just perfect time
to watch the news and go to bed.
So, but it is an incredibly fun event. We invite everybody to come. It's, I wanted to say it, and you're right, I know that, is because there is a reduced fee for seniors, because we want people to be able to attend this event. And, you know, a lot of seniors may be struggling to make ends meet, so we want to make sure that they know that there is a discount for seniors at the door.
Great. And how's everything going at the Cultural Center?
Fantastic. We just had a new group start up called Smart Recovery, and it meets on Monday evenings. I'm not sure of the time. I think 8 to 9. But it is,
I bet it's on your new website.
It is on the new website.
What is that new website?
Well, it's still www.montrosecounselingcenter.org.
Okay.
It's a long domain name.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. We verified it.
But we've just launched a whole new, like, design to it, and hopefully it will be easy for people to navigate.
You have a nice calendar section for the events that happen at the center.
At the center, right. And so, and like I was saying, Smart Recovery just joined us, and they provide an alternative to 12-step meetings. So in conjunction with the chemical dependency treatment program that we offer, we also, it's outpatient, and we also recommend that people get involved with another outside support program. And oftentimes we recommend a 12-step program, but for some people, the 12-step process just, you know, doesn't work for them. And so Smart Recovery is an alternative, and they're going to be starting to meet at Montrose Counseling Center as well. So that's very exciting. We've got PFLAG that is on the first floor. The Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of GLBT History is on the first floor now.
And I know people are probably tired of me saying it, but every time I go up there, walking through the halls of that first floor, seeing some of the history on the walls that GCAM provides, It's what a perfect match for you all.
Isn't it wonderful? And their exhibit changes. I mean, that's one of the great things, is that you may have come and seen it once before, but I can guarantee you it doesn't look the same. When we had the election, there was a lot of election, you know, ephemera that was on the walls. Mm-hmm. There's some pride stuff up there right now. And so... So it's always changing. Gulf Coast Archives and Museum does a great job with that. So now we've got Pride Houston that now meets on the first floor, and they have an office there. And so, I mean, we're just, you know, growing and growing, and it's what a wonderful opportunity to have a lot of people, you know, cross paths on the first floor.
And it's a beautiful facility.
Thank you. We also opened up a computer center, the David Bonnet Cyber Center, and that's available for anybody in the GLBT community to come. And if you don't have access to a computer or access to the internet, you can come to the Cyber Center, get online. We always have volunteers that can help people with, if you know, you're brand new to the internet or brand new on a computer and you're not familiar with double click and single click and you've never seen email, we can help set you up. And
especially that little coffee tray that comes out on the computer, those are great.
The CD-ROM, yeah. So we've got, this is a really great opportunity, and especially one of the things that we're talking about in our newsletter this month is, you know, a lot of people are struggling right now in the job market. And so if you need to create a resume, or if you need to update a resume, or if you need to do a job search, you can come to the Cyber Center, and we've got volunteers. Again, if you're not familiar with the internet and you're not familiar how to do a search on the internet, they can help you out, and they can help you put together a resume. And I mean, those things are critical in this day and age, to be able to provide somebody a tailored resume to the position that you're seeking. So we're very excited about being able to offer a free Cyber Center for the GLBT community.
So let's do a little review here. Bringing the Green is this Friday.
This Friday.
Starting at 6:30?
5:30.
Okay.
Right after work, 5:30 to 8:30. It is at the beautiful home of John Danielson. A lot of the food is provided by attorney Dwayne Todd. Oh, I didn't tell you this. I'm very excited about this, and I'm going to say it real quickly. We have, part of our raffle, a round trip tickets from Southwest Airlines and a hotel stay from Intercontinental Hotels, thanks to our good friends over at the Holiday Inn and the Medical Center. They got us a hotel stay in San Francisco. So we have a round trip travel package to San Francisco that we're going to be raffling off at the event. So we hope that people will come, and I know that I'll be buying some tickets.
Sally Huffer is with the Montrose Counseling Center, and if you need some more information, you go to montrosecounselingcenter.org on their brand new website. Sally, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Join us on Sunday, March 14th, starting at noon, for a party celebrating KPFT's first broadcast 40 years ago. Celebrate KPFT's 40th birthday at the Big Top, McGonagall's Mucky Duck, 2425 Norfolk Street, just off Kirby. Featuring performances from Shotgun Party, John Evans, Jack Saunders, Mike Stinson, Guy Forsythe, The Sisters Morales, Greg Trooper, Randy Weeks, The Mighty Orc, Ray Wiley, Hubbard, and more. Again, the event happens on Sunday, March 14th, starting at noon at the Big Top, McGonagall's Mucky Duck, 2425 Norfolk Street in Houston, near Richmond and Kirby. $20 tickets get you in the door. Visit KPFT.org for the complete lineup and more information. This is KPFT Houston.
Friends of Mandel Park are holding their fourth annual plant sale to benefit the park. Saturday, March 27, 2010, from 9 to 1 p.m. in Mandel Park at 1501 Richmond Avenue, Houston, Texas 77006. There will be a variety of plants and trees on sale, activities for children, and tours of the garden. Enjoy breakfast by Melange Creperie and El Pueblito.
In today's complex world, filled with complicated instructions like do this, turn here, don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate, one way, etc., etc., why not take a break from all of this? Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Gay Men's Chorus of Houston from an album
entitled Topsy Turvy, that was released on a private label last year. The title of the song, Imagine. And I'd like to thank J.D. Doyle for providing this music that we play on Queer Voices. You can look at his website and hear lots more queer music at www.queermusicheritage.com. This is Queer Voices.
An African-American author and Africans on the continent combat homophobia later in the program. Echo in a popular musical is no coincidence for This Way Out's Janet Mason. Our intrepid literary commentator reclaims and redefines the show as a gay play that calls the community to click its collective heels together and come home.
What is the nature of evil? This is the question that the much-celebrated musical Wicked thrusts upon us, and it is no coincidence that the concept of evil is something that everyone in the LGBT community, knowingly or unknowingly, has had to grapple with. Even today, there are those who tell us that by virtue of who we love, we are damned. In other words, evil. When I came out in the 1980s, our redefinition of evil became an oft-repeated slogan, "The moral majority is neither." But somehow the accusations never go away. As Gregory Maguire, author of the novel that the play is based on, Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, writes, "It isn't hard to find evil in this world," said the witch. "Evil is always more easily imagined than good, somehow." Wicked, the musical, has been around for a while and has reached the mega-hit pinnacle of becoming a cliché. As I tell my students, a cliché is a word or phrase that is so overused that it is in need of further definition. And my definition of Wicked, in spite of the fact that it has been claimed by the heterosexual mainstream, is that it is a gay play. I knew the author of the novel, Gregory Maguire, was gay, but what I didn't know was how much this influences the story. Many of the gay references in the novel, Maguire's first novel for adults, were omitted from the play. For instance, a love affair between Elphaba, who we come to know as the Wicked Witch of the West, and Glinda, commonly known as Glinda the Good Witch, that is briefly mentioned in the novel, is obscured in the play. In the book, Glinda reminisces on her youth and recalls how she and Elfie shared a bed on the road to Emerald City, how brave that had made her feel, and how vulnerable, too. I recently saw the musical with my partner before I read the novel, and from the opening number in the first scene where Glinda questions the nature of wickedness, I was hooked. So much so that by intermission, I announced to the askance looks of some of the straight theatergoers in my row, or was it my imagination, that it was a gay play. It is a gay play set in a world where sorcery is an option for a major in college, and where animals and humans talk to each other and enjoy equal social status, until the wizard begins cracking down on the animals, forbidding them to talk, from teaching in universities, and has them herded off to farms. Elphaba, who becomes the Wicked Witch, is, out of the goodness of her young heart, against the oppression of the animals. The music begins with the birth of Elphaba and her parents' horrified response when they see that she is green. Elfie, as she is nicknamed, as the protagonist, takes us with her on her coming-of-age journey of trying to find herself in a world where, by definition of her color, green, and her special powers, which ultimately she is persecuted for, she is not only different, but vastly so. The novel presents us with a complicated, complete, and circuitous world where, as Maguire writes, behind every aspect of the world is another aspect of the world. The musical presents the audience with the distilled magic of that world. It is vastly pared down and open-ended, with room for each member of the audience to enter if he or she dares. Wicked, both the novel and the musical, is rife with myth, and like any good myth, it has been reinvented. In this case, from book to musical score. In both of its forms, Wicked gives us the backstory of the Wizard of Oz, complete with the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, winged monkeys, a corrupt wizard, and the two witches representing good and evil, and perhaps Butch and Femme, depending on your perspective. Dorothy may only have an offstage cameo, and Judy Garland singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow may only be an echo. But have no doubt that in Wicked also you can click your heels together and go home. As for the ending of Wicked, the musical, I don't want to give it away in case you've yet to see it, but if you lean in and listen close, I'll tell you a secret. The Wicked Witch of the West lives. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
James Baldwin, acclaimed African-American writer, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. James Baldwin was born in Harlem in 1924. Coming of age in the 1940s, he felt tormented by a society that devalued what he was, black and gay. To escape his pain, he moved to Paris. There he became a writer, the likes of which have never been seen. Through his formal essays, fiction, drama, and poetry, Baldwin not only legitimized homosexual desire, but shone a light on the inhumanity of racist thought. Over 40 years, he published 22 books. His counterculture writings often brought him under attack, even by fellow African Americans, yet he remained a voice for the oppressed. His death in 1987 made front page news around the world because, while most of his writings predated the civil rights and gay liberation movements, Baldwin's pen certainly figured into the equation. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Jed Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Viola Baskerville.
Hello, this is the actor Michael Emerson. I play Ben on Lost. It's not easy being one of the others, so if time travel or moving the island isn't an option and you're feeling sort of lost, try listening to Greg and Lucia on This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
Biko! 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 Here comes Stephen Biko, walking down the waters. Hey, hey, what you gonna do with Biko?
For all the bad news we hear out of countries like Uganda, Zimbabwe, and Cameroon, the outlook for LGBT Africans is really a mixed bag. All over the continent, individual men and women are breaking out of isolation and building queer communities. Jonathan Gruber continues with this series on gays in Africa, produced by Radio Netherlands.
We've been looking so far at the hostility towards homosexuals in Africa. It's about time we took a look at something a little more positive. Now, in Ghana, homosexual acts are illegal, and gays and lesbians do have to be very careful about what they do. But in the face of adversity, there are men like Prince McDonald who are brave enough to be open and vocal. He's now in his early 30s, and I spoke to him from his home in the capital, Accra, where he told me how life for homosexuals had changed over the past years.
People are more assertive today, and people are more out today. But I would say that I will not be telling people on the street that I'm gay, because it's not safe for me. But I know I'm not shy being gay, and I love being gay, and that's it. For me, it's part of my life.
And what I would like to ask you about is really, can you live anything like a normal life?
Yes, I think my life is normal. I'm living with friends, I'm living with family, my classmates, even though some know I'm gay, that is not the issue. There are a few who know, and they will not come to you, or they will not talk to you, and they will be pointing fingers at you at every given time. But for me, I know there's nothing wrong with me, and I know that I have no problem with myself. That's the issue, and they have problems, so it's up to them to deal with those problems. And I try as much as possible to be who I am, and instead of copying or doing what will please them or what they want me to do for them.
Where do you go to meet people?
I meet people everywhere. I meet people. Today, when you go to the restaurant, you meet a gay person. You go to a bar, you meet a gay person. You go to the beach, you meet a gay person. And so for me, we say, when you say gay, we say everywhere you go, you meet someone. Bars, funerals.
Why is it funerals? Why funerals?
When you have a funeral and you have no gay people coming, then the excitement will be less. So if you have them coming, then you have a lot of excitement, and people will enjoy the funeral. And so funeral is a very big thing in Ghana, and that's one of the areas where people meet and have fun. And
so it's like a party, a funeral in Ghana.
Yeah, you have to dance and dance and dance and dance and get drunk and, you know.
Have you ever been to any large Western cities?
Yes, I have.
You've probably seen how gays and lesbians have become more and more integrated into society, how they become more accepted.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel when you go back to Ghana?
I always think this is where I belong. And then immediately you try to do anything and they say, oh, he's copying from the West. So I always try to remain the African indigenous homosexual. Like, I'm not imported from Europe. I was not imported from America or anywhere. And I tell people, I am a homosexual man from my village in Accra. When I was born in Ghana, I've not seen a Westerner or anything to become a homosexual. And I would not like the idea to be treated as if I don't have sense. Like, I copy anything from Western. I think there are a lot of things that we Africans copy from Western instead of sexual orientation. We copy everything from Western because we are trying to improve everything to become modern and to become like it is in Europe or it is in America. So for me, I think it's just a way and the blame, shifting the blame game that the people say, oh, this is a Western culture. And for me, I believe I'm African, I'm Ghanaian, and I'm a homosexual man, and that is it. I am not a criminal. I don't do anything bad. I don't attack people. I don't rob people. I don't kill people. I don't steal from people. I only love men, and that's my issue. And I'm here, and I'm not leaving Ghana. I will always remain a Ghanaian.
Do you see yourself as a pioneer, Prince?
Yes, I see myself as a pioneer, and then for me, I think it's better you are open compared to being a hypocrite and then you pretend you are whatever and you are not. For me, I believe that you should face the fact. If you have a problem, let people know this is my problem. I don't dream going to seek asylum anywhere. I think I should remain here and help my country develop, and that's what I'm here to do. All my life I've always have this feeling that there's something about Africa that I love. And there's something about Africa that I want to be part of. And I think if I live like others are living, then there will be no one to fight. And there will be no one to help build a diverse society. And the struggle ends. And that's why I want to, that's what I want to avoid. We need to be liberated. We need to be given some freedom to move and to be ourselves instead of being in a closet where we can live freely as any other person.
Prince McDonald in Accra, Ghana. With me are Scott Long, the director of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights Division at Human Rights Watch, and Ian Swartz, who's a gay rights activist originally from Namibia, but who now lives and works in South Africa. What did you think of what you heard?
Jonathan, there's a lot of it that sounds incredibly familiar. I can remember growing up the complete isolation. I thought I was the only person like this, and at that time there was no word to describe it. I just knew I was different, and I was different in the sense that I liked men. Gay life in Namibia is very, very different to what it used to be. Today, many Namibians access the internet.
Are there gay bars where you can be openly gay?
There are. This is the big surprise that many people don't know, and I wish I could say it's everywhere in the country, but unfortunately it's limited to one bar in the capital city. But you know, it's a very big step forward. If you think that 10 years ago people wouldn't go into the street saying that they were gay, today when you go into the city center at night, you suddenly find people very comfortable in their drag and not harassed the way they were 10 years ago. They, you know, a gay bar where you can certainly get to know people and all of that. They're gay-friendly bars where gay people are definitely tolerated.
Well, Scott, that's two stories that are kind of bright lights.
The journey of a thousand miles starts with a single step, and every social movement, every social change starts with an individual making a decision. And those decisions that people are making, Ian's decision that he wasn't going to be dictated to and dominated by his family, and that he was going to stand up to the president of his country and offer a different voice. Prince's decision that he's not going to be alone, he's going to find fellows with whom he can work for change, those are the decisions that incrementally are going to change the whole face of Africa.
How many Princes and Ians are out there, do you think?
There are a lot. I have spoken to so many young people in Africa who wanted to be honest, who felt that these huge megaphone multiplied voices coming from their presidents, from the Musevenis and the Nujomas, saying you're not part of our community, who felt that those voices need to be countered, that somebody needed to stand up and say something different, and who tried to do that. Every day in Africa, somebody is making a decision like that, whether it means coming out to their family or speaking out in church or writing a letter to the editor. And again, that's where change is going to arise.
You can break one human body. I see 10,000 vehicles. Hey, hey, watch it.
Jonathan Gruber of Radio Netherlands discusses more LGBT African politics with Human Rights Watchers Scott Long and activist Ian Swartz next time on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Pam Marshall, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Viola Baskerville, and Michael Emerson contributed program material. Thanks also to Jonathan Gruber and Eric Beauchemin at Radio Netherlands, and a special thank you to Steve Pride. Sweet Honey in the Rock performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. A happy 15th birthday to everyone in the Brazos Valley at KEOS, College Station, Bryan, Texas. Thanks also for listening on WEFT, Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, CJLY, Nelson, British Columbia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And this is Jennifer Renee, and we have two guests in our studio here from Unhinged Productions. And, you know, what's really great about Unhinged Productions that everything you do is unique. I mean, especially unique. And the production you're all doing now, the most fabulous story ever told.
That's right.
The true story of Adam and Steve.
Yes.
From the Old Testament. I just, you know, I immediately said, oh, I knew I was missing something in Sunday school.
Exactly. This was the lost book.
Well, there's a lot of those that come up there. And we're talking with Dennis Draper, director, and Joe Angel Babb, the artistic director. So tell us about the production.
Well, we were brainstorming about what we wanted to do this year, and we were thinking about we needed something that was going to draw people in. We wanted to have a comedy. We wanted it to be important. We wanted it to have a heart. And this play popped to my mind. I'd seen it several years ago, loved it. Made me laugh, Paul Rudnick is one of my, you know, all-time favorite playwrights. Dennis Draper also makes me laugh. Two of the funniest people ever. And I figured they'd make a good pair. So I talked to Dennis about it, and he thought about it for like a minute and said yes.
Yeah. Oh, I love the play. Very funny play. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about religion in the last few years, so it was actually an appropriate time to sort of tackle a play like this, and it is such a funny, funny piece.
I mean, just the concept is funny.
Yes.
But you look at that and you go, wait a second, this is a heck of a story, and it's about relationships, too. You know, and that's really something where you immediately look at, or I did anyway, this is a funny premise. This has got to be great. Got to see this. So listen to that, y'all. Got to see this. But it's also about a relationship.
Sure.
And
400 years, something like that.
Yes, 400 years, and at one point, 400 years and 39 days, that's when they're on the Ark. The last day of the Ark. No, it's really interesting because, you know, we all hear people, you know, scream that line. It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. So it's interesting that Mr. Rudnick decided to explore what if it were. And so he does do it in a very fun way. Act one, basically, is the Old Testament retold by Mr. Rudnick, and with Adam and Steve, and with the first lesbians, Mabel and Jane. And then when we get to Act two, we have moved forward to probably the mid-90s New York. And so we sort of see those same relationships in more of a modern setting, a little bit more. But it obviously still a comedy. A lot of fun, though. A lot of fun to play with. A lot of fun to direct and rehearse. And we've been having a blast with it.
Paul Rudnick is a very serious comedian, to put it that way. I mean, he writes. It's a very well-written play, and there are zingers. And it's just joke on top of joke on top of joke. But you have, in the middle of all this kind of important question about what's our relationship to one another and what's our relationship to God. And we encounter the divine through each other. And so all these kind of questions about, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Why are we mistreated? Why are there all these kind of things that we have to go through? And it's all part of life. And there's this little line in the play. God says yes. Whatever the question, you know, it's like, do you want to have a party? Yes. You know, do you want to enjoy life? Yes. You want to feel sad? Yes. It's a great kind of premise in terms of you have to define how it is you're going to live your life and what it is you want out of it. And each character has this whole different perspective.
How many characters are in?
Well, there are 9 actors.
I mean, after all, this is 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it's got to be a cast of thousands.
Yeah, well, you know, we have 4 actors who play the main couples. We have 1 actress who plays the stage manager of the show on stage, stage manager / God. She creates the whole drama.
In the theater, the stage manager is
I read
God.
Somewhere that yes. God is the director.
Well, you know, sometimes we feel that way. And then there are 4 actors, 2 men and 2 women, who play multiple roles. And it's probably the four most fun parts to have in it, I would imagine. We have a gentleman who plays the Pharaoh. He goes from that to a New York Santa. He goes also to
A bunny,
yes, he plays
animals
a bunny.
On the Ark. Yeah, yes. each of the 4 kind of ensemble members play 4 or 5 characters each.
Well, so. In comedy, delivering comedy is all about timing, and
yes.
you know the premise sounds so funny just thinking of the premise, but actually writing it,
because
comedy is very difficult to write, and to make it come off, you know.
Well, and this is and Mr. Rudnick is perfect when it comes to the timing and getting it to where it's just and you know, that's sort of the struggle as the director, is to make sure that you're making the show as tight as he intended it, because you actually have to go through that 400 years in one act, which is, you know, a little over an hour, to cover 400 years of history there. So it's a challenge, but
I mean, you know, the creation of the world.
It only took a couple of days.
The Garden of Eden.
Well, we managed to do it in about 5 or 6 minutes, I think, in the show. So thank goodness for the stage manager and light cues.
Yeah.
What got you in this idea of doing this one play?
We unofficially dubbed this season an unashamed season. This is our ninth season of producing work for Houston, and we wanted, again, as I mentioned earlier, something that was going to draw people in, but we also wanted to do something that was important. So the idea of when the timing of this was right after Prop 8.
Right.
Succeeded. So I was very much thinking about my relationship. I'd also just recently bought a house and with my partner, so there was all these kind of extra steps financial planning that we had to do that, you know, my straight friends and family weren't needing to take those steps as a married couple. So I was hyper aware of civil rights, basically.
Right.
And I wanted to do, I just felt as an artist, what could I contribute? What sort of thing could I, because I'm not very involved in politics, but I am very much interested in plays and theater and drama and art. So let's respond to this. Let's have a dialogue with our community about this topic. So this play came to me along with a project that we're working on called Uncivil Unions that'll happen in May.
Oh, okay.
So I think of them together because they're very much a pair, the two projects.
Well, so. Theater and like we've been talking about goes back thousands of years, has always been used as a political statement.
Very much so. Yes.
Shakespeare was always goring somebody about something, but all the way back to Athens and some of the stories that came out of that and the wisdom of that was all about telling the story, but also making it real to what's going on around us at any given time. So at any given time in history, the theater reflected the political status that was existing, but also was making statements about how it should be. So, you know, you're following right on along. Well, tell us about this next one. I want to make sure, when and where is this one? I don't want to let us get too far into the interview and not, you know, hey, let's promote this, guys.
The Most Fabulous Story Ever Told is running Fridays and Saturdays throughout the month of March. We also have a couple of Sunday shows and a Monday show on the 22nd. And it's throughout the month of March at the Frenetic Theater, which is our venue. That's at 5102 Navigation Boulevard near...
the original Ninfas. That's how you
I know exactly
it.
Where
yeah,
that is.
Exactly.
Yes.
Lockwood and Navigation. It's a great little space. It's a renovated warehouse space.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very happy to be there, and you can find out more information at our website, comeunhinged.com.
So what's the website again?
www.comeunhinged.com.
Okay. Yeah. It was the come unhinged. Say I missed that. Yeah. I want to make sure we got that.
Unhinged. Yes.
.com. And I'm sure there's tickets available. And
there currently are.
It's Monday, so you can make arrangements for Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is, you know, as with the creation of the world, there's a little bit of nudity, and language, and a little
male
bit
or female.
Well, there's male nudity, nudity. It's brief, but it's there, and there's a lot of language in adult situations. So it's not exactly your Sunday morning.
Don't bring your 12-year-old.
No. This isn't Sunday school.
No, it's not Sunday school.
Yes.
So
I might have turned out differently if it had been.
Right.
Or maybe I turned out right anyway.
Exactly.
One of the things that I love about the play is even though there's, you know, this potential for you know, scandal, or, you know, it's titillating to have, you know, male nudity on stage, and it's very honest, and it's just very
yes.
brave, and it's quite charming, you know, when our heroes discover they're nude, and it's just so fun and playful, and it's nice. It's not scandalous or
no
lurid or anything. So
But it did titillate a lot of people.
Yes, heard that.
Slip that in?
Well, you know, we had to throw that out there somewhere.
Oh, yes. Well, full disclosure.
Yes. My mother's actually coming specifically because there is nudity.
Nice.
Well, really?
It's been a while. She's been in East Texas for a while. She hasn't seen a naked man in a long time. So
wow.
She comes to the show.
We'll have to get her right front and center.
Right. Well, she'll need it. Her glasses are not as strong as they used to.
Oh, God. So you've got another production coming up.
Yes. We do. We've been working on the Uncivil Unions Project since January, and we've been working as a group of artists and really looking at how we have been responding to the issue of status in our relationships. Everything from, why don't we hold hands with our loved one in public, to questions of legalities, after our gay partners die, like rights after death, that sort of thing. Housing, getting loans, buying houses, and just kind of looking at research, looking at journalism, looking at art, and really kind of figure out what our answers to these questions are. We have like 11 questions that we're really focusing on, trying to find an answer to. Now, I know this sounds kind of, scholarly and kind of, dry, but we really have a nice, stylish aesthetic, and we really are coming at this from a sketch comedy point of view. So we're trying to take all this really kind of heady information and topics and have fun with it, because we really want to be hopeful about it. And, gay rights has evolved so quickly, so much in the last 20 years, that we are very hopeful that things will change. But there's all sorts of different voices that we want to hear from, and we want to be sure that we are on the right track. So we have a focus group. We're inviting people from the community to go to the GLBT Community Center over here on Montrose Boulevard on Thursday, the 11th, to get their feedback. We want to ask them the questions that we've been asking ourselves and check in to make sure that we're not too far off base.
Absolutely. Now, I don't know if you heard our first interview. You may have been on your way over here. About the U.S. Census.
Yes.
They're going to be asking for our partners. You know, when we do it, we can put down marriage no matter what the law may say.
Yeah.
If we see our relationship as a married relationship, we can actually put that down, which is a far cry from the days of antiquity.
Yeah.
Which was, a year ago.
Exactly.
That's right.
A different age.
And the city of D.C. recently,
Yes. And Mexico City, of all places, I would have never guessed.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the country of Mexico is, like, really pushing hard on that Mexico City. But, it's interesting. I mean, we've been looking at all that sort of information. We wanted it to be very much a homegrown kind of litmus test to, see what was happening here and now, and to record, for it to be a document of recording. So we've been really focusing, because there's a lot of really good information and a lot of really good stories. Everything from, Anise Parker to, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and just all the things that are happening around the country. We want it to have a Houston flavor.
Probably scaring a few people out there, too. That's the way things are moving.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. What would you want to tell our audience right now about the show that you want them to get out of it? This has come. This is what you get, other than the nudity.
I think it's important for people to know that, I grew up my entire life, in a Baptist home with a grandmother who was strict Pentecostal. So I got, all of this religion sort of pounded into me growing up, and a lot of it didn't pertain to me. So I think it's important for people to come to this sort of show with an open mind, to laugh with us, but to also think about their relationship to God and their relationship to each other. And, I think that's, to me, that's what I've gotten out of it. I've gotten, out of this whole experience that your relationship to God is probably very personal. And just because in a book that was written by who knows,
Who.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell your stories necessarily. It doesn't mean your stories weren't there.
And we hear a little bit from the playwright in the play, too, because you know, he's Jewish, the playwright's Jewish, and he makes fun of Christianity, he makes fun of the Jewish faith, and it's all there. And one of the characters is saying, you know, why pick on Mormons? Why pick on the Jews? And another character says, pick on everybody. Pick on everybody, you know. Poke fun at all the, you know, ceremony and pomp and circumstance and the bigotry of
question it all.
Well,
the greatest freedom of the spirit is to be able to laugh at yourself.
Most definitely.
So, yeah, well, absolutely. Give us the information again about the show, when it is, and how they can get the information and get tickets. And
Sure. We have performances this coming weekend on the 12th and the 13th, and then the following weekend on the 19th and the 20th and the 21st. And we close on the 28th, so that's the 26th, 27th, 28th. And we have a special Monday night performers for all our friends in the theater who are working right now. So
we do
Monday night shows to try to get some of our friends to come.
And the website?
www.comeunhinged.com.
We've been talking with Joe Angel Babb, Artistic Director of Unhinged Productions, and Dennis Draper, the director of The Most Fabulous Story Ever Told, about, you know, religious history, the story of the Bible, you know, and, of course,
well, there's the greatest ever
Adam
story
and
ever
Steve.
Told. There's the greatest story ever told.
Yes.
This is the most fabulous.
This most fabulous story ever told. Okay. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Welcome to Queer Voices, and this is J.D. Doyle, and a mini-segment of my show, Out Radio. You can find the whole show and more at www.outradio.com, but this will give you a taste of it. started with a very up song called Caroline. It's by Brandi Carlile and is from her latest album, Give Up the Ghost. If you happen to recognize the voice, joining her on that song was Elton John, and that shows you some of the credibility and acclaim she's gotten in just a short time. This is her third CD, and her first was only in 2005, so she's come a long way fast. If I had heard this album when I was compiling my Best of 2009 show, well, it would have been on it. And I want to play one more by her. I don't normally buy an album after hearing just one song, but I did this time. And the song I heard was called That Year.
Time gets squishy when there's less of it to waste. she in the head like a bully passing by down a narrow hallway gallery of the memories that you frame. The objects in the mirror look silly, they seem it's not some faraway face. A big old rock canyon wall, edge of a cliff, not pretty at all. Take a step, close your eyes, you might learn to fly. Dusty trunk, hefty pack, easier to see if it isn't on your back. A busy bridge clear to cross, might feel better if the heavy stuff is tossed. There's a key to the lock of your childhood home, but the rooms are rearranged. Bruised but aware while you're tripping on the chairs, it's not some faraway place. A big old rock canyon wall, edge of a cliff, not pretty at all. Take a step, close your eyes. If you get this far, hello fate, so long deferred. Life goes by like the shadow of a bird on a wide, wide window, looking over a map drawn on your face. Horizon so much, you could paint it if you try. It's not some faraway place.
And following Brandi Carlile was Ann Reed from Ann's new album, Where the Earth is Round. She released her first album in 1981, and I figure this is about her 20th release. Closing this mini-segment of Out Radio is a single I like quite a bit by Adam Joseph, and it's also got a terrific video called Finally.
Meeting Mr. Right, the man of my dreams, the one who showed me true love, or at least it seems. With brown cocoa skin and curly black hair, it's just the way he looks at me, that gentle love and stare. Finally you've come along, the way I feel about you, it just can't be wrong. If you only knew the way I feel about you, I just can't describe it. Oh no no, finally it has happened to me, right in front of my face, my feelings can't describe it. Finally it has happened to me, right in front of my face, and I just can't hide it. To be the one, but all he ever wanted was to have a little fun. But then you came along and brightened up my world, and in my heart I feel that I'm that special kind of girl. Finally you've come along, the way I feel about you, it just can't be wrong. If you only knew the way I feel about you, just can't describe it. Oh no, no. Finally it has happened to me, right in front of my face.
Yeah, yeah. Ow. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, 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 oh, yeah. Finally, it is happening to me, right in front of my face. My feelings can't describe it. Finally, it is happening to me, right in front of my face, and I just cannot hide it.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack at queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Staring down the barrel of a gun. Commercial radio holds the pistol, but their trigger's way too slow. And the people, they have spoken, pledging their time and their dough. So we're throwing a huge party, and the honoree is you. With the music, beer, and laughter, and Ray Wiley Hubbard, too. I can see it now. Lizzie's swinging from the rafters while shotgun party howls. Greg Trooper spilled his Guinness. Guy Forsythe is finding towels. And John Evans is backstage flirting with the Sisters Morales girls. And he blames it on the Mighty Orc and a weakness for the curls. Jack Saunders running sound while Randy Weeks is getting down. And Mike Stinson is staying at the Baker Hotel, and it's all going down in H-Town. March 14th at McGonagall's Mucky Duck. 40 years of music. KPFT, man, it's a party. Y'all be there.
KPFT Houston.
KPFT's local station board has an open seat, which expires at the end of the year. At which point, if you would like to stay, you have the option to run for a full term on the local station board. The local station board meets the third Wednesday of each month. Anyone interested in joining, please contact election@kpft.org. The application deadline is Monday, March 15th. The special election will be held Wednesday, March 17th. Once again, if you're interested in joining, please contact election@kpft.org. We look forward to having you involved. This is KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.